What is up, everybody? Welcome to the FTM Fantasy Baseball Podcast, episode 16 of the 2023 fantasy baseball season. I'm Vlad Sedler. You can find me on Twitter at RotoGut. I'm with my co-host, Matthew Davis, at Matty Wood on Twitter. We're recording on Tuesday evening, May the 9th. And here we are, 20% of the season complete, a big chunk of the season left. How are you doing, my man? I saw you in prime seats for, it was a Brewer game, was it? Not a Cubs game, right?
Yeah, I was up in Milwaukee, a 1 hour drive from Northbrook, Illinois. So I went up there by myself, stopped it at the Brat Stop in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Shout out to anybody that knows that place. It's fantastic. Great place to get a brat and a beer. And then went to the Dodgers and Brewers game by myself and watched the Dodgers get their teeth kicked in. But it was a great time because the seats were awesome and you just can't beat it. There's no chance that you could go to Dodger Stadium with ease that I did and sit in a seat like that for the price that it costs. So really thriving for my second year here, or second baseball season, I should say, while living in Illinois. So I've been enjoying, you know, traveling around just a little bit and going to plenty of games. So I've been to six this season thus far. And I got home and watched the Lakers game. I actually stayed up for this entire one too. So shout out to me for being able to stay up past 11 p.m.
Nice, man. Nice. Yes. We know you are an early riser. Go to bed early. I'm kind of the flip side. I'm usually up writing, researching or whatnot till 11, 12. Usually my wife is usually up working late. And if sometimes we get to catch up on some shows, sometimes it takes us a couple nights or even a few day delay to be able to watch like whatever our Sunday HBO show is, like Succession. By the way, Curb Your Enthusiasm is going to be back for one final season. And that's going to be sometime, I think, either in the summer or the fall. But yeah, Larry David and the crew is back. That's one of my favorite shows of all time. One of those shows that I can always just click on any random episode and just be completely enthused. It's fantastic.
That is probably the best news that we will provide this evening. But thank you for joining us.
Because yes, now we will talk about starting pitchers in Major League Baseball. Not as fun. You know what? I wanted to kind of start things off. It's not necessarily a rant, but I don't know, man. I'm kind of feeling like fantasy baseball has been super maddening this year, and maybe I'm just overthinking it, overdoing it. First of all, I just want to say, in general, it is just, I mean, to be honest, it is harder. Like, over the years, like in the 2000s and, you know, through the 2010s, I feel like I was just crushing everywhere I went. And like now, these last few seasons have been a little bit more humbling. Competition is tougher. I'm constantly learning things from other people, not only in the industry, but some of the high stakes players, some non-high stakes players. There's just so much information to take in. But it really, for me, the issue has been maybe like over worrying about these pitching starts, right? Like, I don't think we've really been used to in quite some time where pitchers will just throw up 6-7 earned runs in any given game, and you start to see your ERAs in the fours that you're not used to, in some cases in the fives, and it just feels like this hole that you've climbed into that you can't get out of. And so how do I put this? It hasn't been the best for the mental health, which is really silly because we're supposed to love this, supposed to be fun, but then also a part of me is super competitive. I want to beat the best of the best. I think I'm one of the best. And so it hurts. It really stings. And then Monday night ended up having a nice string of starts. For the most part, all my pitchers did all right. And I was happy about it, but it's just like a day-to-day feel because you don't know what you're going to expect the next day and where things go. And then like little things like, you know, Max Scherzer, been waiting for him all season. And then now he's got the neck spasms and the shoulder injury. And, you know, you popped him in for a two-step that he was supposed to have last week. Now he won't get it this week. Now he may or may not go in the IL. You spend a third round pick on him. Just so much going on. So maybe it's, you know, it's too early for burnout. It's still early May. And I got to remember that it's a really long season and just got to deal with it. And also it's a game.
Yeah, so my wife Brandy, she tells me on bad nights because I've had a few of those. We call them good nights or bad nights when it comes to fantasy baseball, and she can obviously tell when there are bad nights. A Kevin Gausman blow-up would be considered a bad night in the Davis household. So I understand where you're coming from in all sorts of aspects. So my Vegas main event that has Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer. That doesn't sound awesome, does it? But it's hanging in there. It's 22nd overall, has 120 and a half points. So we're surviving, right? We're finding other ways. So you got to continue to grind. You got to continue to, you can't wear it, by the way. You can't continue. One day you can get pissed off for a little bit. Have a beer, go outside, read a book, you know, don't watch baseball. I definitely recommend that. Kind of just change the tune, catch up on a TV show. That you're kind of, you know, put on the side because you've been watching too much baseball. On another team, it's been doing okay, not great, and it has started off really rough. It's been one of those teams that have the bad ratios, a 1.2, or coming into the week, it was at 1.31. The WHIP, I believe, 1.3, 1.31, and then the ERA was 1.3. That's not
ERA
great.
1.3.
4.3.
Okay. Hey,
Oh,
that's
yeah. Oh, sorry.
considered like
I was going off whip. Yeah. So
Bro, that's
4.3.
average.
I guess that's not that bad now, but that's after John. So here, but this is what I'm saying. Here, I'm going to paint a sunny picture. John Gray, Marcus Stroman, Charlie Morton, and Aaron Nola. So they haven't been that great, excluding Marcus Stroman, but those four have gone. And two of them are still going right now, which they'll probably shit the bed now that I'm discussing them while they're pitching. But things can change quickly, right? If you have those bad outings, can I know it's harder to change it back to the positive side of things to get those numbers down. It's much easier to spike, but you can still get them down. We're still early enough in the season that you can get things down. And I think the big question with this conversation that we're having is when do you think that we can start looking at our league standings? Not necessarily the overall. Let's consider this a league standpoint from now. At these categories, at these ratios, at where you're at, and think, okay, I got to do something different. I got to change my tune because now things really aren't changing like I had hoped, right? I still think that we're still early enough in the season though, where I wouldn't freak out too much, unless your team's a total fucking train wreck. I mean, that could possibly really be a scenario for you. But for even the teams that I feel shitty about, I don't feel that shitty about.
And I'm probably over analyzing it because a lot of these, I mean, I do have some main events that, I mean, the pitching is just a disaster, and they're bottom five in the league. And then I have some really good teams. I think most of my DCs are anywhere between first and fourth. My super auction that I'm very excited about is off to a good start. It's danced through raindrops on the pitching side. But yeah, I was going to say, I think, you know, stepping away and it not always just obsessing on it is really important because we have to remember what a long season it is, and it's, you know, it's gonna be a lot of stress. I remember it was last Wednesday, I think. I had the day off and I was really pumped up. It was gonna be Joey Lucchese in the morning and then Brandon Fott's debut. I was so excited, man. And I can't tell you, I don't remember the last time I was so tilted from baseball occurrences. And this is separate of DFS. Like, you know, when you have a bad DFS day, you're like, man, I just spent all this time researching and now my stacks aren't hitting. My pitcher just got shelled. This sucks. I'm pissed. You know, and obviously sometimes it even affects the home life. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to be that dad, that husband, right?
Right.
But I've been playing a lot less DFS. I'd probably be tilting more. So this was one of those days where I was really affected just by standard fantasy, just by what was happening. And so obviously Lucchese only pitched like a few innings and or like three innings, got shelled, and then Brandon Fott absolutely destroyed. And he was good. He was solid for about four innings or so. And then just disaster city. That last inning where, you know, Adolis, I think we talked about it last week, Adolis Garcia was coming up. And so after that I just stepped away. I took a few hours away. I think I posted something cryptic on Twitter about subtweeting. And I just laid back, you know, and it was nice. You know, I did some other things. I did grab a book I hadn't read in a while. Thought that was important. But Yeah. I mean, you know, got to keep the mentals right. It's a long season. We're all, you know, subjected to it. But about recency bias, specifically about that, what is it? Is it just me where we have like a certain perception of certain players just based on kind of what they have done in the last week or two? Like if you were to post a poll of, say, four pitchers now versus a month from now, and they're having completely different results, a lot of times the results of this poll will be affected by literally what the pitcher had just done. And we forget sometimes, right? Like a lot of people think like Brent Rooker's like the next coming, like this is the major, you know, he's going to be amazing, but Tyler O'Neill's going to suck. And I mean, I always bring him up as an example, but man, it's such a long season. Be patient with it. My point about this is like, for example, Tanner Bibee, right? Came in, had those first couple starts, and that's kind of our only perception of him. Like this dude is just nails, always nails in the minors. Like you almost can't foresee what had happened to him against the Tigers. It was almost like weird to you, right? And same thing with Bryce Miller now. He's had two, came out of nowhere. Most people hadn't even heard of him except for the deep prospect people. Comes in, two straight gems, second one against the Astros. And now, if for whatever reason he gets shelled in his next start, I think it's Detroit. I'm sure he'll be fine, but you never know. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like perspectives change so much, and we got to realize that, like, literally any pitcher can get blasted at any time. And just because everything is sailing so well doesn't mean it's going to continue to, like it did for like a Justin Verlander last year, all season long.
I don't think that this is going to be the case, but for what you're saying to sort of piggyback that, you could also have somebody that's been doing really bad. Let's use Max Scherzer as that example. And he could potentially still start this weekend, right? And it's been another pushback. So he's had two setbacks now from, we'll call it his fake IL stint / suspension. And then now that he was sort of barking and talking about what his ailment right now with the shoulder and the scapula or whatever, he's being pushed back. And right now we're currently reading that he's supposed to start this weekend. So look, I don't think this is going to happen, but let's say he goes out there and pitches seven innings with eight strikeouts. It wouldn't shock me, you know, and then things just become right for him. You know, maybe the time off was needed. And, you know, that's just one example. But I do think some of these pitchers are going to get right. I think some that were an obvious fade for me, or a fade for myself, not an obvious one, but, you know, pitchers going in that I was out on. And if they are performing poor, I'm probably telling myself right now, oh, great, I feel good about that. And then there's pitchers, if I was coming into this season feeling great about, some I don't feel great about anymore. And then there's some that I do. So, you know, you do have to look at things differently now, but I still think that you need to sort of trust the process. If your team's healthy and, you know, others, all of us are taking these welts, right? I even tweeted Zach Eflin's the one taking the welts tonight. And then after that, he still went six innings and only allowed four earned runs. That's probably considered a gem at this point, but,
yeah.
you know what I mean? Like we're all taking them. We're all mm-hmm. getting hit with mm-hmm. them. So, you gotta just,
right. It's a don't make emotional decisions thing, right? So
great point. Yes,
and don't let that reflect in your FAB too, right?
Overspending next week or the week after that, etc., or cutting somebody because they haven't performed for a week mm-hmm. or two. Yep. Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I looked at one of my main events where I had just had bad closers luck, and the closers themselves haven't been all that bad. Am I really worried about Ryan Helsley over the long term? No, I'm not. I think he's fine. Obviously, he doesn't look like the same guy that he was last year, where he was just absolutely unhittable. Giovanni Gallegos basically buried himself in his own grave over the last week. And so Helsley's back in that spot. Obviously, at some point, the Cardinals are going to be winning ball games. Yeah, they're not going to be on this, you know, ice cold streak. Maybe it'll take an Ollie Marmol firing. But at some point, they'll get going. He'll get regular save ops. And so in these cases, I didn't have a Jason Adam to bid on. I don't think Michael King was available, but I was hurting. And I knew if at some point Helsley will get back there. But I was looking at my team, and I do look at week-to-week results on all of my teams. And I noticed that it had one save over the last 2 weeks, and it was really hurt. So on this team, I picked up, you know, like a $27, I think, Mark Leiter, $27 Zach Jackson, who I think is going to pretty much hold things down for the A's. They really have no one else. Mm-hmm. And we'll just roll with it. Let's see how that goes. I've been hurt by the whole Bruzdel Graterol thing. You just never know, right? I got, you know, somebody trolling me like, oh, look, Evan Phillips got another save, because I've been kind of on that Graterol train.
A committee situation, by the way. So option A is going to be Phillips, but you will see, similar to Holmes, if, like we've seen Aaron Boone, sorry to cut you off, but this, let's bring that up. Bruzdel is going to get saves, and so is Evan Phillips. Evan Phillips should see the majority of them. But similarly to, like when Boone said previously, before Clay Holmes has just crumbled, if we're playing the Blue Jays and it's the eighth inning and Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and George Springer and, you know, those guys are coming up, I'm going to use Holmes in that situation. That's similarly to what Dave Roberts is going to do with Evan Phillips. And the Twins will use that with Yoan Duran at times. You're going to be seeing Bruzdel Graterol be that option B to come in and, you know, kind of piggyback and clean up after mm-hmm. Evan Phillips. So they're both going to be worthy because of, look at the win percentages for the team too. That's the important part on a team like that. No, if there was an option A and an option B high leverage guy and another guy that could get saves, but the team winning percentage is hovering at 500 or below, you know, for the rest of the season projection or outlook, right? Foreseeable future. Or if it's going to be where the Dodgers are at, or 600 plus percentage, 700 percentage, then yeah, you can harness one or two of these guys, you know, like the Minnesota Twins with Duran and Lopez, et cetera. But if it's the Oakland A's, it might be Zach Jackson, but I don't want whoever the hell else is option B. If there's an option B in a committee, I don't want anything to do with the committee right there. Yep. You know, and even the Cubs situation right now, I don't want to get into who it should be or could be, but I don't really, it's tough to, you know, with some of these teams to kind of play with that game, play with that fire. So,
yep. And then
I just like Bruzdel.
I do too. I know he doesn't seem to have the like full on wild swing and miss stuff. At least, I mean, he's not racking up the K's, unfortunately, but, and you know, giving up runs here and there, but yeah,
they are addressing that with him too. They're trying to work on getting a second pitch and the usage up on it. And then they're hoping for more swing and miss and then the location on where they're kind of where he's putting it. So hopefully that'll turn around. It's the Dodgers. It's Bruzdel, right? He has the velocity. So hopefully good things will follow.
And on the Max Scherzer point, by the way, I feel bad because I have had a couple people ask me about some trade offers. Just some subscribers, some friends have been asking, you know, hey, I want to trade him, you know, now for this, for that. And I've been against it. And this is even before whatever happened today and he got scratched. My main concern is that you're not going to get much back for it, right? It depends on what the trade offer is. There could be, you know, there could be something really good on the table and you just want to kind of back away from it. But I think the value is about as low as it gets. And if you're in trade leagues, you really want to avoid those type of situations, unless you're just completely out. That's a whole different thing. But for me, honestly, because it is the second week of May, I would rather him miss this week. I'll take my lumps and just get him right. Because with Max Scherzer is healthy, and even still at this age, he's going to be good. He's going to be not even good. He's going to be better than good. That's what I want, and I want it for the long haul. I don't want to have to deal with this all year. So if it means having to take my lumps over this next week, put him on the IL if you have to. Do whatever you can. But what will you get in return right now in a trade offer in any kind of competitive league? It's not going to be what, you know, the return value be of his perspective of what he can do.
Yeah, so the draft capital is going to be way off first and foremost. If you're looking for a 1v1, one player for Max Scherzer, we'll call it. I think that you, in order to have a trade work out for you, if you were getting rid of Max Scherzer, it would be a categorical need that you are clearly identifying on your team. So let's say somebody has a player with speed, potentially, and you needed a lot of speed, and you were confident that this player is getting playing time and speed, then maybe you make that deal. Like, but other than that, you know, can't look at it as like, oh, I'm getting this player, look at this player, and it's just not going to be, won't flatter you. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, like someone, you know, someone tries to get you. You're good. Say you're good in pitching. Someone offers you Brent Rooker. Obviously, don't be a rookie. You know, I'm not going to take it. Wander Franco, it's a different story. Now, oh, that's a guy you need.
I was thinking like Nico Horner. Like,
well, he's hurt now.
Right.
But yeah, that makes sense. Well, let's jump into some of these things here. First thing I wanted to mention was just the players in the top 12 of fantasy value. And it's interesting because the top four guys right off the bat, they're all outfielders. I think the number one is very awesome because every time you look at his box score, it's just amazing. He's just, you know, he's getting on base. He's running. He's just going to run away with the 101 so long as he stays healthy. That's Ronald Acuna. And then the 2-3-4 in overall fantasy value, Randy Rosarena of Tampa, Adolis Garcia, and Cody Bellinger. So there's your top four. Pretty interesting, huh? Which guy does not, which of those four is most likely to have the least amount of end of season fantasy value?
Oh man. That's hard to say. I would, well, because, okay, so Adolis Garcia, I don't have any, and I wrote him up as a fade for me, and so I wanted to, like, dive in, and the reason why I didn't like him was because of the plate discipline, and I thought potentially that it could be a problem. I actually used the player ABC method with, you know, hiding the names and showed plate discipline of Javi Baez, Adolis Garcia, and Cody Bellinger in an article at FTN Fantasy, and it was just so concerning for me to see what Adolis Garcia had done the last couple of years with strikeout rate and O-swing rate, screening strike rate, et cetera. And he's improving on all of that. So if you're improving on all of that and you're hitting in the middle of a lineup that's about to get Corey Seager back, by the way, and you have all this power and speed, you're fucking awesome. And so it's definitely not going to be Adolis Garcia. I'm like willing to take my L on him. He's.
Oh, I took it.
Yeah,
I already took it. It's just, oh yeah. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, this is not to say that the Rangers are going to continue to score 7 runs per game because they won't, and they will go through some cold streaks. I even made a joke on Twitter like maybe they'll start to suck as soon as Seager's back. Ironically, yeah, you know, probably not the case, but they're gonna regress a little bit, right? Negatively regress. It's just natural. It's normal. And hey, it's a competitive division. It'll be fun. It'll be interesting. But yeah, I would have to say Bellinger. Honestly, if I had to pick one of those four, I don't think Rosarena is really slowing down. But yeah, that's an interesting group there. You got Jorge Mateo still hanging out there. He's fifth. Marcus Semien, another Ranger. That's our second Ranger in the top six. He started off not cold, but I think he only had like one home run in his first couple of weeks. I mean, dude's getting multiple hits per game, scoring runs like crazy. This is a very valuable offense, and I don't have enough exposure to it. Have a lot of Rays, don't have a lot of Rangers, you know, c'est la vie. But Mateo and Semien are 5-6. The 7-8 are the only two pitchers in the top 12. And these are the top two pitchers in, you know, fantasy, obviously. Shane McClanahan and Zach Gallen, your respective AL NL guys there.
So Semien, kind of attached to Adolis Garcia from a correlation standpoint, being in the same lineup in Texas, they're about to get Corey Seager that I kind of mentioned briefly. So the most recent report on him is that he's going to be returning soon after his rehab assignment. So I believe the beginning of next week. But who is that going to impact who's been playing well? I wanted to mention Ezequiel Duran. The quote from the manager, Bruce Bochy, today was that he is going to continue to get a lot of playing time after Corey Seager returns. And that was a tweet from Evan Grant, a beat reporter from Texas. Back to the players. Mateo, dude, he's providing the biggest ROI. So if you bought back in, shout out to you. I unfortunately didn't. And it wasn't really a fantasy talent standpoint sort of thing. It was, are you going to play all the time and where are you going to hit in the lineup thing? And he is doing well enough to get the playing time. And it's just combining for explosion. Shout out Sammy Reed, because I know that Sammy Reed's been riding that ship for a while. So fucking get it, boy.
The funniest thing is I have very little Mateo, but I ended up with him on my most important team, my super auction. Just needed speed, decided to bid on him at you know, drop of a hat. I think it was, you know, $2 or whatever. And I got him, and it's been a wild ride. It's been great. Funny enough, I did bench him for this half week for Zach McKinstry, of all people. And part of it is, hey, I have McKinstry. I want to use him. That shouldn't be a reason to do it, obviously, but it was, okay, faces Cleveland. Yeah, they're going to see Bieber, but three righties, so he will lead off all those three games. He does run. I need stolen bases. I know Mateo does too, but Mateo had Tampa, so it was one of those tough calls. It's like running the, you know, the guy that's hot against the guy that kind of has the better setup. Plus, Mateo hits all over the lineup. You don't know where he hits. So far through two games, I've got a run, an RBI, and a stolen base from McKinstry. So I'll take it. So all it takes is one big Mateo game Wednesday for that to balance out. But so far, happy with that. What ended up being a tough decision.
And I quote, "I have very little Mateo." No, you have plenty of Mateo. I'm right here.
Right. Yeah, you're Mateo.
You got plenty. Right. Yeah. Right. Chris Morrell. Real quick, sorry, bud. Just hit a home run to tie the game, 4-4. So I'm sure Wrigley is rocking right now. So yeah, just got called up yesterday, I believe, and wasn't in the lineup, the starting lineup, and then cracked it today, hitting right behind Matt Mervis, and he just hit a home run to tie the game there. And so
nice,
yeah. Oh, and I think we might get a Jose Alvarado save situation, maybe.
Okay,
hopefully. We'll all see. Right. Stay tuned for that. Yeah.
Our 9 and 10 on this top 12 is Rafael Devers and then Thairo Estrada, 9-10. He's hitting like 340, stealing bases, hitting some homers. He was another popular fade for a lot of very, very sharp folks. And so far, well, we don't know how it'll end, but so far it's looking good for the, I don't know, the non-sharp folks or the not looking good for the fader. I don't know. Yeah. So there's your 9-10, Rafael Devers. And
you think I'd be having a terrible season right now. I don't have any Rafael Devers and I don't have any Thairo Estrada, but you know what? Like I said, if you asked me right now how I feel about my season, I would think that I'm doing pretty good. So the point that I would provide in this scenario when talking about players, what are Devers and Thairo Estrada going to do for you if you don't have them, would be that you can still have success without having, you know, exposure to all of these guys. You don't need exposure to all of these guys to compete. But yeah, Thairo Estrada, he's the one that's really proven me wrong. Hitting for more power than I expected already. And now that he's at the top of the lineup and he's not being one of those platoon, you know, Kapler ornaments.
Yeah.
He's rocking and rolling. So definitely ready to take the L on him too. Cause where you're at in the lineup and what you're doing, it matters, and the playing time's consistent. So,
and kind of the only giant that's doing anything. I mean, Haniger hasn't done anything since he's been back. Conforto's been struggling mightily. Yastrzemski's on IL. Jock Peterson's always sitting against lefties. It's been rough. So there's your 9-10. And then finally, rounding out the top 12, two more Rays. Hey, look, two more Rays. Wander Franco, who after his, I think, combo meal on Tuesday, probably moves up into the top six or so. So you got Franco and then you got Yandy Diaz. So 11-12. I will note that if you kind of look, and this is me looking at the Razzball player rater value. I know Baseball HQ has theirs as well. That is really solid. But I mean, if you look at the top 50, you'll see a lot of Red Sox, a lot of Rangers in there. Alex Verdugo kind of surprised me. I think he's like 30th overall on that list. So
yeah, baby.
Obviously, just is really good. Really good. And that's for now, right? I mean, a lot of things can change. There are two catchers currently earning more than 25. One's an NL guy, and rather obvious, and that's Sean Murphy, the number one catcher in baseball. You know who the other one is, right?
I don't.
Jonah Heim.
Really? See, I wouldn't Jonah have been able to. Heim. I wouldn't have been able to guess that. Really, I know that he's doing pretty well. That's. I know Bubba. He's been tooting his horn on him. So go, yeah, good stuff. He's. I have him in one league, and it is in the Gladiator League. So, and
nice.
It's actually one that is, I mean,
you need him.
It feels like you're either doing really well or really bad in those. At least I am. And it's one that's doing really well. So, yeah, I have a little bit of Jonah Heim.
Nice. I saw something on, I think it was on the Angels big screen because the Angels and Rangers were playing each other. Something about, I think he had a daughter recently and how they kind of missed the boat there, not naming her Anna. So, Jonah Heim. Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's a good one.
Stolen bases, by the way. So we're through a little more than 30 games. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. Can we rewind to Yandy Diaz real quick?
Oh, yeah. Of course. I'd love to talk about Yandy. Yandy's Dandy.
Yeah. So last season, his barrel rate was 4.8%. So if you're in a trade league and somebody maybe thinks that it's just a hot streak and they're not buying into some of these adjustments or changes, maybe you can get Yandy Diaz. And so the barrel rate last year was 4.8%. This year it's 13.4%. But the biggest thing is the launch angle, which has increased from 7.7 to 10.5. And he is currently 90th percentile or more, or higher, I should say, in average exit velocity, max exit velocity, hard hit rate, and expected batting average, along with expected WOBA. So if somebody was willing to sell him and they weren't really believing, I don't know, you know, you never know. But yeah, he's awesome. So it's really great to finally see the adjustments.
Only thing I worry about him is that he gets hurt, because I'd love for him to just stay healthy, mash all season. I mean, lead off atop of basically what looks like the best lineup of baseball. And, you know, you figure things out with the power. You're already a good contact hitter, good play discipline. I mean, it's to the moon. I do have to pat myself on the back. I think subscribers know the draft guide that we had out in December. You and I each did an article about identifying breakout hitters, identifying breakout pitchers. My cover boy, my main guy featured, was Yandy Diaz. So he was the guy that back in December, I said, I'm going to get everywhere. And of course, as draft season went on, and I do have a lot of Yandy. He is one, I think him and Rendon are my top owned rostered third baseman. But there were times where I was like, well, okay, well, you know, now I have enough of him. Let me grab a Rendon or somebody else, or I have Riley, so I don't really need. So I didn't really fully focus on him. That's another funny thing about draft season. When you draft a lot, you kind of back off certain guys that are your guys, and then later on you regret it. But anyways, yeah, Yandy, I think Brendan Donovan was on my list. And then I will shout out Eduardo Rodriguez was on your list of pitchers. So nice one there.
He was the picture. He's the poster boy of the article. Yeah, and then Justin Steele was number two on that list.
Ooh, so nice, nice.
Subscribe to FTNFantasy.com and read our pre-draft.
We will tell you the future until we don't. Stolen bases, interesting note here. So we're a little bit over 30 games through the season. And this time last year, in the same amount of games, there was only one guy with double-digit stolen bases. That was Julio Rodriguez, the rookie. You remember he started off cold those first couple weeks, striking out like 45%, and then just went on a tear, just started running. So he had 10 stolen bases at basically, you know, the 33-game point of the season. This year, there are 10 of such guys. It's loaded, right? And obviously, Esther Ruiz, every time I've been looking at the box score, he's just like running. He looks good. So just a little mention there about the speed here.
Yeah, it's definitely up. He, I believe, was in your projection system to get the most stolen bases. It was pretty crazy. But yeah, him and Ronald Acuna Jr. are running like wild, 17 and 15 apiece there. Jorge Mateo, Nico Horner. Nico Horner's day-to-day with the hamstring. I'm surprised that they didn't just put him on the IL right away. It looked to be pretty severe. I would expect him to go on the IL. I don't know if they're just kind of trying to just, I don't know,
save money on the player.
Yeah, I don't know. So yeah, Horner, he's been doing awesome in that department. Cedric Mullins is having another great year. Cedric Mullins has 28, and that's not including what he's done tonight. And I know that he's gotten an RBI tonight, so he's at least at 29 RBIs. Anybody that drafted Cedric Mullins was not anticipating 29 RBIs, and he came into today 10th overall in RBI.
Really?
You don't even fucking know it if you had Cedric Mullins.
I think I really stay on top of all the stats, and I knew
gnarly.
You know, I've seen him batting ninth lately a little bit. I know he'd be doing well
against lefties. He gets buried a little bit. Yeah,
that's interesting. And you know, and Esteury Ruiz, by the way, when it came to main event season and we were drafting those last couple weeks, I couldn't get him. There was just no way. At that point, I had settled myself on the fact that, like, yes, I know I need speed, but I'm going to find other ways. Like, the price is just too much for the risk. I think like maybe people got in my head, or I just kind of got into my own head. You know, that like your own personal regression monster, so to speak, where you, you're like, man, I projected him for the most steals, but what if he doesn't lead off? And that's what did happen for early part of the season. And it was a little bit concerning. But yeah, now lo and behold, leading off, By the way, a little bit of a youth movement there. If you look at, I mean, they're not all quite young, but if you look at that middle of the lineup, it doesn't look as bad as it did just a week ago with Rooker, Shea Langeliers, and J.J. Blidé. I mean, these aren't like the biggest, brightest, best prospects in the world, but it's not a, you know, it's not a bad core.
No, it's not. And they're going to get Seth Brown back. I actually added him in the Vegas auction league last week. Kind of light on power there. So just kind of, you know, trying to make a cheap bid there and hope for something good when he comes back. So yeah, I mean, they've put up 5 runs again tonight, so they are scoring a little bit more lately. So Ruiz at the top, Noda, Rooker, Blade, Langeliers, and then they just missed Ramon Laureano is out with a concussion. So hopefully we never like to see those head injuries. So hopefully he's able to return soon. So once you get Ramon Laureano back and you get Seth Brown back, it's, you know, maybe just maybe if they're on the road in a hitter's park, maybe we don't just immediately run to say we should stream against them fully healthy. Maybe. We'll
makes see. Sense. But, yeah. One other interesting fact. So I think everyone knows how amazing Luis Urias has been in the batting average department. Obviously, he's, I think, the only guy hitting over 400. He's hitting 414 currently. And I mean, not much else. Obviously, you look, he's got 1 home run. Marlins aren't really scoring many runs, so he doesn't have all that many, and obviously not many RBI. But he also leads majors in on-base percentage of 469, which is pretty damn sweet.
It's pretty nice.
You know who's second? So it's a tie between our boy Yandy Diaz and Brent Rooker. 441, not too bad.
He's been solid. I know Rob DiPietro likes him. He's one of his boys. Look at his, he's 12, 13th total in RBI. Hey, having 26 RBIs coming into today on the Oakland Athletics is pretty damn good.
It's good. It's definitely good. By the way, Anthony Rendon, he's next on that list. He's got a 431 on base percentage. He just hit his first home run over the weekend. But yeah, he's hitting 295. I mean, did you know that?
No, go, keep going.
Sorry. I was just going to say, I get, you know, there's certain teams that you get really excited about certain, looking at their box scores. If you're not watching games and you just want to like, just see like a boatload of runs, the Angels are one of my teams. Cause I got, you know, you got Otani, you got Renfro, obviously Taylor Ward, I'm heavily invested in. And then, you know, Rendon. So,
So obviously we can poop all over Rendon's power metrics right now, right? So there's nothing really that's going to be there. If you go, oh, well, look at this. It's, you know, it's happening, right? You did mention that he just hit a home run, but there has been some goodness from Rendon. I think this would shock you as well. The Cedric Mullins. So I did actually get the incorrect part on Cedric Mullins. He didn't have an RBI tonight. So he's still at only 28 or not only. At 28, so Cedric Mullins has 7 more RBIs than Matt Chapman. But that's my next point. Would this surprise you that Anthony Rendon only has 5 less in counting stats than Matt Chapman?
Would it surprise me? Well,
in counting stats, RBIs and runs combined.
Does it surprise me? I mean, no. I mean, he's in a prime spot. I mean, he's in right behind Trout and Otani. So, but he's missed a little bit of time. He was cold, you know, kind of the beginning of the year. But
so not everything's terrible there, right? With a 295 average, so you are getting counting stats, 295 average, and he has surprisingly 2 stolen bases, which kind of is a lot for him this early in the season.
It's just a health thing, man. I mean, he's Anthony Rendon. What he did a few years ago wasn't by accident. And, you know, that's why I get like, it really triggered when I hear like he's washed or this and that, whatever. It's just like that, again, going back to the original topic, the recency bias, the over assumptions, you know, you really dig into these players, what they've done, what they're capable of, the team context, if they're healthy, like a lot of good things can come out of this. By the way, totally random and probably shouldn't be doing this on a podcast that's recording the day after, but the Brewers just hit 2 home runs off Shelby Miller, who was red hot, dude. This dude was unhittable. I think he had like a 1.5 ERA, probably in the mix for saves. I think he even has a save. He just gave up a bomb to Rowdy Tellez and then a bomb 2 batters later to Victor Caratini.
That's how it was last night when I was there. Joey Wimmer went deep. Willie Adames went deep. I think they put on a total of 9 runs on the Dodgers. So, yeah, the Dodgers seem just a little bit thin still right now in the pitching department, don't they?
Yeah, I was going to mention, tell me if you think this is a mistake or not. Well, maybe it's not. Maybe I'm just setting up for, you know, something here, but to kind of pat myself on the back again. But I don't know if it's going to work out. But all I would say is I picked up a couple of Gavin Stones. For whatever reason, he was calling out to me because he was optioned, because he didn't have that good first start. And again, going back to the whole topic of, you know, what have you done for me lately? Well, now he's in the minors. And hey, Noah Syndergaard, don't trust him. Don't like him. I think he's, you know, best suited as middle relief guy, if anything. And he had like what, some weird blister on his finger and was pulled after one inning.
Did you see it?
I saw a photo.
Okay. Yeah. It was pretty bad and it looked gross. And if you're familiar, I don't know, the first person they mentioned Josh Beckett as an their example on the broadcast for the Dodgers. That's who they, you know, were kind of just trying to give an example to fans that were watching the game as to the time missed, right? I think that that's the big underlining thing here is this is going to be an IL stint. It will take time to heal. I think the most recent one for the Dodgers for me that I would think of most commonly was when Rich Hill would go on the IL when he would pitch awesome. And then he would just all of a sudden miss 2-3 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. Because he was out with a blister. So there will be a layer or layers of severity of it because of the skin that's going to be missed and what popped. And he's going to need that back, especially to be able to grip that sinker and the slider, et cetera. So yeah.
Well, okay,
Gavin Stone's going to get called up, and he pitched career high? No, season high, 91 pitches tonight for Stone in the AAA.
No worries that, I mean, Pepio, I read something about him today. I think he's kind of getting back in there. He's just throwing the live hitters, yeah, so it's not happening anytime soon. Plus, he's on the 60-day IL. Yeah, he's not, so he's not back for another, I mean, he's at best early June, mid-June. Yeah, so we're not worried about that. Bobby Miller ain't ready. I saw him get blasted. I mean, he's just kind of back in the mix the last few weeks, and he got blasted, I think, in his first start in the minors. But yeah, Gavin Stone, he'll be back. He'll be next. And yeah.
Yeah, there's – and yeah, not sneaky Ryan Pepio. Right when you said his name, I was like, that could be sneaky. But no, him and Michael Grove, Pepio and Grove, so they just did start throwing to hitters, and they are not near rehab assignments yet. So – especially with seeing 91 pitches tonight for Gavin Stone, and he's right in line with Noah Syndergaard, right? Same time frame. Potentially we could be seeing a two-step next week for Gavin Stone. It's interesting. I would like to pull up the free. He's not going to be available in a main event, is he? Or I know he,
sure.
He might be in some OCs.
I'm sure people dropped him this past week. I mean, so he was available.
Oh, wow.
I got him on my auction. I got him in an OC.
23%. He's available in 77% of OCs, and in the main event, Gavin Stone is available in 26%.
There we go. Yep. If you got any money left,
yeah. It's gonna cost. Well, because the schedule too. That isn't it crazy when sometimes they line up for a two step and that just costs just a little bit more because they have a 7-game set and he pitched tonight 91 pitches. So the Dodgers have 4 more games this week, which puts him in line to face Minnesota at home at Dodger Stadium and then on the road at St. Louis.
By the way, how much did that gem from his second start, Bryce Miller of the Seattle Mariners, how much did that gem increase? Because his average winning bid price was more than Tanner Bibee's. And yeah, you know, I talk some shit on Twitter here and there, and I mean, I hope people kind of take it all with a grain of salt. Like, I'm not like, you know, bitter.
Sure.
Like, oh, he's not worth it. Like, what do I know? All right. Like, we don't know how these things are going to work out. I can make my educated assumptions, whatnot. He could end up being the best guy of this whole group. Maybe it's Mason Miller. Maybe he comes back and, you know, that we know that he has no structural damage. Like, maybe he's the guy. Maybe it's Bobby. We don't know. Maybe the guy hasn't come yet. Right. So when I say that, you know, on Twitter, you know, I don't want people to get agitated and just realize it's a lot of the stuff is tongue in cheek, but I wonder would he have gone for under 100 if say he gave up 6 earned runs on that Sunday start?
So there's a lot to these concoctions, man. The team.
It's
so
wild,
the,
huh?
The first team was the Oakland A's. So when you first saw him, right before he was available in Fab, it was the A's. And so then you go, well, okay, let's look at the next star, and it's the Houston Astros. And he pitches very good against the Houston Astros. So it's two consistent starts. So you get back-to-back starts. That's one part in the drink. And then you have the Houston Astros as the second team. That's another part in this cocktail. You shake it up and it costs more. So, you know, it's just it's everything lining up. Like with Stone. Stone had a bad outing, but now it's going to be a two-step.
Yeah, so that's my favorite thing in fantasy. That's what really makes me feel good. It's not even just like a certain pitcher having a good game, you know, or my hitter hitting two home runs in a game. It is scooping up those values. Like the in two OCs last week, a day before I got called up, I got $2 $6 Matt Mervises. That felt good, right? Yeah. The next week, yeah, I bid, you know, 120 for him in some other league where I wanted him. But like those $6 ones felt good. I'm hoping my $8 Gavin Stones feel good. But that's like a big part of the game for me is getting that, like, not even last year's, but it's the last week's bum, right? Last week's bum, drop, forgot about, you know. And it's different. Like in the case of Brandon Pfaadt, for example, like, you know, by the time people are listening to this, we already know how his start would have gone. But it's different, right? Because he's kind of already on the bubble after that first start. I mean, just to be honest, yes, if he does not pitch well this Tuesday, he could get sent down. They don't really have anyone else. I don't know what they're going to do about it. But if he has two bad starts this week, he will easily get either, if not demoted, he will at least get dropped on most teams. So that's a little bit of a different situation. But yeah, I'm just rambling here, but you know what I mean.
But no, I do. But and I think it's important that you highlight and understand, like, those are the pieces that keep your ship afloat. Because if Max Scherzer and Jacob DeGrom aren't working out, you do need $5 Bailey Ober 2 weeks ago. And so continue mining and looking for the next potential profit before it's, you know, going to cost exponentially more. It's going to cost a lot more. Always go to free agency when you have time. What I do too, what I do when I'm looking, when I have the time, I like to look at each position through each team in the availability. So, you know, for each league. So yes. Looking at, you know, middle infield and corner infield, and then going to pitching, and then, you know, and that's how I kind of, which helps me for the FTN bullpen report, is looking at the upcoming schedule along with, you know, the pitchers and who's available for each team when it comes to relievers, if I'm in a pinch for pitching, because the starting pitching pool and streaming is just not it. So, yeah, There's still time to correct things.
Yes, yes, yes. And especially for a lot of teams that have spent a lot of money. Obviously, Todd Whitestone, our colleague at FTN, who does the free article, Whitestone's Waiver Watch, he covers a lot of that. And then also our friend friend for some, enemy to a few, Zach Waxman, who's a really sharp dude. He has something that he basically is that stood out to me, is he tracks the aggregate spend in the main events. And apparently we collectively as main event players have spent $100 more at this point of the season, approximately that much, than we did this time last season. So a lot less money to go. And every week there's a new starting pitcher to bid on. Right. And it doesn't seem like it's going to end anytime soon. Right. At some point, Yuri Perez will be up for Miami. You know, Matt Liberatore will be up. So yeah, it's Gavin Stone this coming week. It's Gavin Williams at some point. It's nonstop
in this economy. That's immediately what I thought. Like, wow. And I actually asked Zach that question on Monday morning on the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast about what is up with all this money being spent. And it is obviously a combination of just so much shitty pitching and poor performances. And then each week we have been seeing, mostly from the pitching side, but also this upcoming week we had Matt Mervis, but you know, the Tanner Bibee and Logan Allen and the Millers and et cetera. It's just been coming in waves, and you can't stop and help yourself. And especially if you need it, we're needing it more than ever. We're needing them as saviors, not just to even, oh, okay, as depth. Like, even if you have depth, you're bidding on these guys triple digits.
You know who I feel like I missed out on, though? I really missed out. I really feel like Logan Allen is going to be really good. I mean, he already looks really good.
I like
good,
him. But,
man.
Got him in two mains.
Even those bids were high. I don't know. What did you spend for him? Because he was going like high hundreds, low 200s.
169 and 180.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man. It's crazy how much we're spending. I have like $300 to $400 on most of my teams. I don't know how I'm going to make it fit over the next few months, especially when I see some of these, like, you know, they're players out there. Like, okay, so first of all, the main event overall leader, Mike Major, who is amazing, a fantastic player.
Yeah.
Heard him on DiPietro's podcast not too long ago with Mark Winoker. That was, I learned a lot, by the way, listening to those guys and listening to different people's processes. But like, he's in my live main event where he hasn't relinquished first place over this, you know, the last month and a half, and he's got like almost all of his fab. It's really crazy.
Oh baby.
I got Doug Roth in another one of my leagues who just like is just sitting on like 950. I'm like, I'm scared. I'm just sitting here like just like shut, you know.
What are you doing, Dougie?
I don't know, but
Doug's a friend of the podcast.
Okay. But that's the thing. He's a good player and he's fine. And I hate that when I have other, you know, I'm the sucker. I'm spending all my money in fab. And maybe I won't be, right? Maybe I can I'll win some of these leagues or compete. But, man, it's like, you know, what you're going to, they're going to have just the hammer on everything. Whoever they want at some point, they'll just be able to get whoever they want.
Can you explain this to me? Okay, so in one of my Vegas main event leagues, there are three teams with less than $300 remaining. There is a team with $1,000 with their full budget remaining after 7 weeks. How does that happen?
Well, I mean, it's obviously case dependent, but it could be a new player, right? Or it could be, I mean, I don't think somebody quit. I mean, just like, you probably don't want to help the name.
Actually, maybe that does explain it. Michael Brantley, Carson Kelly. Oh, wow.
You just gave up.
Kendall Graveman. AJ Pollock. Oh, I didn't even know that there was a dead team in the league.
Wow. Well, good for you.
Cool. Groovy. Party on.
All right. Well, yeah, that happens. That happens.
I really didn't know. I just thought he wasn't being like that active via fab, but or maybe he doesn't know how to use fab, or I don't know. Maybe
no. It's that's somebody who just I mean, yeah. It's like that one person, remember years ago at a main event where somebody was just like, he was just there in town from his wife with his wife and liked fantasy baseball. And it just so happened somebody couldn't make the main event or gave up or quit or something. And then this guy just rolled up and got to draft live. You know, they took him in, took his money, and he just sat down. And it's like, it was like, for him, apparently it was just like the greatest experience of his life, right? Like, you didn't expect it. You came to Vegas. What? There's a fantasy baseball live draft community? Like, you know, wow. So
the team isn't in last place, though, so it's hanging in there.
It's not in last. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, this is always a dead team, I guess, when you have a full budget at this point, unless things are going really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll have to ask you about this this after the pod. A few other pitchers wanted to mention, just because there's some fantasy relevance with the rotation. One is James Paxton. Mm-hmm. So he joins on Friday. I don't think a lot of people have high hopes, expectations here. So he'll face the Cardinals on Friday. Somebody's got to get bumped, right? I have been a huge Tanner Houck guy, just a guy that, you know, a case of me thinking I'm smarter than you know, professional real life front offices and managers thinking, like, hey, why do you keep messing with Tanner Houck? Why do you keep sending him to, you know, the minors, to, you know, the middle relief, this and that? Just let him start, let him pitch. Well, now I'm seeing why. He's got a series of trends in from, you know, dating back to last season to this season. He is not a deep guy. He's not maybe really a starting pitcher. And I hate to use the ERA. Jeff Zimmerman probably doesn't listen to the show, so I can mention ERA regardless. But a 1.08 ERA his first time through the order this season, a near 5 ERA the second time through the order, and a 16 ERA the third time through the order on Tanner Houck. So it tells you something. And, you know, look back to a lot of his starts. I mean, even going back to last season, he's always just like unhittable those first couple innings and then just kind of loses it. So maybe he's not meant for it. You know, that's why they're piggybacking him and things like that. But if Paxton stays healthy and Brian Bello looks good and Whitlock is back and he's healthy, something's got to give, right? At some point, there has to be some movement. It could be Nick Pivetta. Like, Nick Pivetta continuously sucks. So at some point, if everybody's on point, everyone's banging, maybe you, you know, you piggyback with him, or you, you know, you flea sack him, or something. I think he just sucks.
Yeah, he gave up at least another 7 today against Atlanta.
Should be my boy, Blue.
But I think Tanner Houck would also be better in the bullpen too. So you mentioned him kind of sizzling out as the pitch count goes up. You know, the strikeout rates were pretty high for him in his first 4 games. Oh, well, 3 of those 4 games. But then after that, he hasn't had a game with a strikeout rate at 20% or higher. So his last 3 outings, strikeout rates of 8%, 18.5%, and 18.2%. That's just not going to cut it. And I do think that he would be more effective as somebody in middle relief. So yeah, continue to monitor that. And then the James Paxton thing, that's going to be interesting to see how much burn he's going to be able to give his fantasy managers. He's mm-hmm. currently available in 38% of main event leagues in the NFC. Yep.
And then now, speaking of the whole, you know, Gavin Stone coming back, we have another fresh situation going on in Atlanta. Obviously, this is one of the teams that you want to have starting pitchers for, because you know you will have a higher percentage chance of nabbing some wins because they provide a lot of run support. But Max Fried, unfortunately, he's on the 15-day IL with a forearm strain. They do not believe it to be Tommy John related, but they also say that it will not be short term. So now we're back to where, you know, back to the drawing board where we were in the beginning of the season with all the Jared Schuster hype. I haven't looked back. I haven't seen what he's done, Schuster, over the last couple of weeks, but now they need him. My first point is Bryce Elder's safe as hell. Like, dude is just, he's in, he's locked in the rotation. He can even give up some runs. He's going to stick around because, you know, this rotation is dragging. So, you know, Frito's will be out, I think, for at least a month and a half. And Dylan Dodd's start did not go too well when he came up and stepped in last weekend. So maybe if Jared Schuster pitches well at Boston this week, and then he has a 2-step next week, by the way, all of a sudden, hey, we got more money to spend. Spend up, people, spend up.
Yeah, Jared Schuster is likely to start tomorrow. So if you're looking at the MLB app and you cruise down to the Braves game, it says TBD. Yeah, and it's likely to be Schuster. So he's coming off regular rest. Should be ready to roll. It'll be interesting because you kind of mentioned earlier about, you know, the good performance right before Fab. He did not pitch good when he was in the majors the first time, but there was some serious hype around him. He started going with inside the top 20 rounds in the main event. So people started to really buy in on Schuster. And if he's he does pitch. Yeah. And if he does pitch well, the Fab will most certainly cost more than if he doesn't.
And I'm looking here. He's been pretty sharp outside of the walk rate, but 4 starts in the minors. He's 1-0, and he's got 2.5 ERA with a FIP and xFIP double that, by the way, well over 5. And then 21% strikeout rate, not great. A 16% walk rate, very bad. But anyways, it won't matter because if he throws a gem. If he throws a gem against the Boston Red Sox and he has a 2-step next week, big money will be thrown.
You see this? Look at me.
You're doing the Kemi Mutombo finger to me?
No. The very bad.
Very bad.
Very bad. Bring up. I'm excited for this next one.
Oh, which one?
Chase Silseth.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so, man, I feel, you know, sometimes you make good FAB decisions, and not FAB decisions, but like money wise. So like somebody like me who was already going with like $400 going into the week. And I wrote up in the Sunday update that Chase Silseth should be in the range, like below TJ France, but like right around there with TJ France, Adam Wainwright in 15 teamers. And I really thought he was going to go for like 30 plus, even though he got bombed in the Sunday game. So he stepped in for and pitched a few innings of relief. And you know, the Rangers just rangered him, I think, 5 runs and it didn't look good. And so I should have been able to just grab him for single digits. I ended up spending like 25, 35 unopposed in some cases, not unopposed. It was like, you know, $8 back up. So I could have had him cheap. Instead, I overspent. And there's a psychology there where now you're almost a little bit committed because You know, now you have him and you spent the money on him, so you want to kind of have him pay off for you. That's never a wise, you know, way to go. But he does have a rotation spot. He is was the top pitching prospect for the Angels. We saw him pitch a little bit last season with, you know, mixed results. But friend of the pod, friend of mine, Matt Modica is a big fan. So hopefully Matt is right and Chase Silseth can perform for my roto teams.
Yeah, you know, the poor performance against the Texas Rangers could be a blessing in disguise, because if he did come into that relief appearance and pitch good, that FAB would have cost more than the 2% that you were talking about, even though the 2% was higher than you needed to spend. Zach Waxman and I actually talking on the Monday with Matty Wood episode blamed you for the 2% that we both spent on him as well, because we were both we thought we could have snuck him in at like $2 to $5, and then in your Sunday update in the FAB report at FTN,
oh yeah,
you were saying, you know, kind of sit around that 2%. So we trusted you, and we went up to it, but we were happy to get him. And I think that that bad performance, it's tough to just, hey, the starting pitcher, you weren't, you know, expecting to come in and get all this bulk, and who knows, maybe the timing wasn't right with preparation in that scenario, being thrusted in like that. So hopefully the next time around, he does face the Cleveland Guardians, like you mentioned, which is a really tough team. They're one of only four teams with a strikeout rate of 20% or less. Actually, I'm sorry, there's two more teams, the Mets and the Blue Jays as well. But yeah, so the Guardians are stingy. So you and I kind of, we texted about starting him this week. And if we weren't necessarily in a corner, you know, and didn't have to, we both kind of concurred to just sit him aside this week. And then next week, I think against the Minnesota Twins is when you should roll him out. The Minnesota Twins currently have, coming into today, the third highest strikeout rate in all of baseball, small sample size. But yeah, nearly a 26% strikeout rate is something. And it'll be his third long outing in the majors this time, or at that point. So I think that the pitch count as well, that was kind of a concern with me for this outing against the Guardians. They're pesky. They don't strike out a lot. The pitch count might not fully still be there. I think he was at 70 pitches or something like that in his last outing. So a little increase there in the third outing that we would see against the Minnesota Twins, who have the third highest strikeout rate. So yeah, I think that will be the coming out party, but you will have to add him if you want to try and get that this weekend. He's available in 32% of NFBC main event leagues. That's Chase Silseth. And hopefully if you're wanting him, then maybe he doesn't look that great against the Guardians. I don't know. We've already mentioned that the pitcher's performance has been, you know, definitely impacting the cost of FAB.
Yeah. One quick thing on him. If you dig into him last season, and this is kind of the one issue with Chase Silseth, is patient teams, he's not going to get through. He's not going to even qualify for the win. So last season, and this is just, you know, you look at last season, he made 7 starts. His first start of last season was in mid-May, right around this time last year. He threw 6 innings. It was a gem. It was 6 scoreless innings against the A's. Well, obviously weren't a good offense at this point last year either. And then he made 6 more starts between then and the end of July, none of which got into the 5th inning. So, you know, patient teams and him kind of losing things towards the end, that could end up being an issue. Hopefully some things he's figured out for this season, but that's something really to watch with Chase Silseth.
Yeah, I'd rather watch that on my bench for 2% than pony up 20%+ for something real bad.
Yep. Well, I think that's about it. Just mentioned that the Reds go play 3 games in Coors this weekend. I don't know, man. I like these shows. We didn't even cover a lot of the topics that we had here. I mean, a lot of the individual players. It would have been more boring if we're like, oh, Starling Marte moved to hitting 6th, but he has 9th. So be, like,
he went 2-for-4 tonight, so maybe that wakes him up.
Speaking of waking up, last thing I'll mention, Jerks and Profar moved to 7th in his order on Tuesday. 2 home runs. So sometimes that works, you know, motivate your move your third baseman to utility and maybe he'll perform.
Absolutely. Well, I had a good time tonight.
It was fun. Thank you everybody for listening. For Matthew Matty Wood Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll catch you next week.